Hello.
Hey, Sam, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. All right, so you got your second World Series here in 3 years. Which one was better, the one 2 years ago or this year?
Oh, it had to be this year because I was there for the clinching game. I didn't see any in person last time, but to watch that in person, oh, man, never forget that one.
I mean, just mind-blowing to take that lineup and shut them down for four games the way they did. I mean, that's... And the pitching staff, they're all young. I mean, this team's going to be could be together for years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at not just their starters, but the guys in the bullpen. And, you know, I mean, Brian Wilson, who was kind of the star of 2010, was down this year, and Romo steps in at the end and, you know, closes it down. I mean, I think they're the true definition of a team, just a collection of guys who do the little things right. And, you know, together, collectively, they're great. Individually, they might not be great, but... Man, it was just such an awesome experience to go and see that clinching game. You know, growing up a Giants fan my whole life, just awesome.
All right, let's go over to football, and I'm happy to say that we finally could talk about Chris Conte in the way that I've wanted to for so long, because it seemed like this was, I mean, I know that I harp on him, but it just seemed like this kind of a game was coming, and this was the player, what we talked about with Steve Smith, this was the player who would know and go after the holes. And we can talk about a wide range. We can talk about Steve Smith all we want, but can you assess for me, I think Conte was a little more visible, but both of the safeties, what did you see from them against Carolina?
Well, Conte especially, you know, just we've talked about it probably every single week, you know, that we've had these conversations just about how he has to be fundamentally sound, and anytime he's not, he puts himself in a bad position. And, you know, the long pass over the middle put himself in a really bad position. You know, was playing the middle of the field and allowed basically kind of a dig route to go underneath him and hit right down the middle of the field. And, you know, if not for Tim Jennings' 4-3 speed, it would have been a, I don't know, 70 or 80 yard touchdown. He just gets himself in those positions sometimes, and I think, you know, he's trying to do the right thing, and his eyes usually are reading the quarterback, which you're taught to do in the deep middle of the field, because with that pass rush, you know, you're going to say if a quarterback is looking one way, it's going to be hard for him to be able to come all the way back across the field and make a throw before he gets hit. But I think with Chris Conte, not just his eyes are reading the quarterback, but his body starts to go in that direction maybe a little prematurely. You know, instead of keeping his hips square to the line of scrimmage, he opens his hips up a little bit. And, you know, you open your hips up and you want to try to come back the other way when the quarterback changes his look or throws the opposite direction. In the NFL, you just don't have time to do it. You can get away with that in college and junior college and high school, but, you know, a wrong step up there, and that's what happens. A receiver gets underneath you, and now, you know, you're looking at a gain that should be about 12 to 15 yards. Instead, it goes for 60. So the margin of error for anybody, but especially, you know, a free safety in the middle of the field is very small, and that's kind of what we saw. And I you know, Major Wright is solid. You know, Conte got kind of hung out to dry a few times in cover two down the sideline because Tim Jennings thought he saw a run and jumped up and really just allowed Cam Newton to throw a, you know, a straight line shot on the sideline, which, you know, the corner's responsibility in cover two is to get a little bit of depth to force that throw, to have a little bit more air underneath it and give that safety time to get over to the sideline. And a couple times he didn't do that. And, you know, it appeared, you know, Chris Conte's making a tackle with a receiver with, you know, 3 yards of open space. But, you know, it was also the corner who didn't do his job and put a little more air under that ball. So, you know, I don't think, you know, it looked bad during the broadcast. And watching it on film, you know, Chris Conte definitely had one of his, you know, worst games of the season. But like I said, these are really small mistakes. And unfortunately for him, they kind of all happened Sunday, and they had a guy, you know, Cam Newton and Steve Smith, guys who could exploit those mistakes, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, the play in this game for me that I think people have almost forgotten about is when Steve Smith split the seam and basically had the corner and the safety beat, and if Cam Newton makes a throw and doesn't force Steve Smith into that circus catch, the game's over.
Yeah.
And it was a matter of, again, we laughed about it last week. Nobody, no other receivers do this to them. No other receivers, when you watch on a regular basis, just simply chew them up. And this guy, I mean, the sideline catch over Tim Jennings, that to me was just great physical play by Steve Smith.
Yeah.
This was a play where he was running by himself. And I tell you, someone will come up with a reason one day why he just can shred this defense at will. But those guys weren't even close. It was as if they didn't see him.
Yeah, I don't know. He really likes the food they serve at the hotel the Panthers stay at, or you know, he has a massage therapist up in Chicago that gets him feeling the right, whatever it is, you know, he likes the bright lights of Chicago, and he seems to show up. He's a guy that works well in space. You know, if you give him a little bit of space, he can make plays because he's physical. He's very strong. He's good after the catch, but, you know, he is quick enough to maneuver himself to give Cam Newton, you know, an area to throw the ball to. And that, yeah, the play right down the seam, and I put that more on Tim Jennings than I do Major Wright, simply because it really was, you know, out towards the numbers as opposed to being, you know, between the numbers and the hash, which, you know, you say your free safety should be able to make a play on, but you know, he got down the field fast, and I don't think Tim Jennings or Major Wright, you know, expected him to be in the position he was. And Cam Newton, you know, luckily for the Bears, just launched it a little bit too hard. Otherwise, I mean, really, he should have been walking into the end zone because, like you said, he was just wide open. And
yeah. Cam, doesn't there come a point, though, with Lovey where he just has to say two guys on Steve Smith? I mean, I know that he doesn't do it often. But now the data shows that this guy averages 160 a game against him. At some point, you've got to say, okay, I know what my system is. I know what my safeties do. I know what – this guy doesn't give a shit. He just goes after it, and it works.
Yeah,
I don't know. Knock him down or something. Hurt him.
There's no explanation if, you know, you can hold Calvin Johnson to 37 yards while you can't hold Steve Smith to, you know, double that or even triple that. You know, instead he does six times the damage that you know, Calvin Johnson did, and it's unexplainable, you know.
It's every game. It's ludicrous.
And, you know, if Steve Smith was still performing, you know, at the level that he had, you know, when he had his previous big games like 2005 playoffs and 2005 regular season, if he was still performing at that level week in and week out, you know, now you say, hey, this is just a guy that does this to defenses, but, you know, he's not that guy anymore. He still is very talented and can make teams, you know, can hurt teams defensively, but he's not the same guy putting up 1,500 yards a season anymore. So to see him do this consistently, all you can do is shake your head, really.
I mean, I said to somebody when we were watching the game, the guy said to me, well, I still remember 2005. I said, that's 7 years ago.
It's not like it
happened 3 weeks ago. That's a player from seven. I can't talk about Steve Smith anymore. Okay. See, here's a thing, and I don't know how to phrase this, so I'm going to try to. Every time the Bears get down around the goal line, so when the opponent is, say, in between the 10 and the 5, I always say the same thing to whoever's sitting next to me. Watch the quarterback draw up the middle. Because, and I don't know why, but this has been working now for about 10 years. Culpepper used to run it all the time. Aaron Rodgers has used it a bunch. They drop back. They wait a second. The rush comes up, and they're right up the middle, and it seems to be almost foolproof. What about this system, this defense, and that play, don't I know? And why is it always so successful?
Well, the main goal for the front four is to get up the field and create pressure on the quarterback, you know, regardless of where they are on the field. And then you add into that, you know, the fact that your middle linebacker in cover two, which they play most of the time on the goal line, you know, is kind of your middle third player. So you release your receivers vertical, you know, you get the back out of the backfield and force the coverage to widen, and now, you know, the middle of the field tends to be wide open if the quarterback can find just one seam, which there should be, you know, at least one with only four guys rushing up front. If he can find one seam, he's going to get positive yardage because your Mike linebacker is going to drop a little bit. And, you know, if you threaten the sidelines as well, then your Will linebacker or your nickel linebacker or your Sam linebacker have to get width. So now you have a middle linebacker that drops, outside linebackers that get width, and a front four that, you know, is rushing the passer. And there's a big void right in the middle of the field, and that's usually why you see those plays work against the Bears, and they might not work. You know, I mean, Cam Newton, they kind of work regardless of who they're playing most of the time, but that's why you see them working against that system more often than you do every other system out there.
It's because, basically, you know, I kept thinking, is there not something to be said for maybe not forcing that pressure up the middle or dropping one of those guys back? But you know what? Henry Melton in space against Cam Newton, probably going to lose that battle anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it always just struck me because it seems so predictable to me, and it happens more often than it doesn't. And I keep wondering whether it's just something Lovie has to say, hey, that's going to be either improvised or called. There's nothing we can do about it. If we try to stop that, something else is going to be open. So, I don't know. It's been something that's bothered me for a decade, so I figured why not ask somebody about it.
You know, if you pick what you want to have happen, you know, in that area, you know, inside the 10, you know, inside the 5, you're going to have a little bit less space to work with because Brian Urlacher is not going to drop. If you're at the 5-yard line, he's going to set his feet on the goal line. He's not going to get any more depth. You know, back at the 10, now he has to get a little bit of depth. But if you say, hey, let the quarterback run a draw, okay, we'll come up and we'll smack him when he runs the ball. Okay, if they want to do that 3 or 4 times down by the goal line, go ahead because, you know, we're going to get free shots on this guy. And, you know, that's fine with us. We're not going to let him sit back and throw one right over the middle of the field for a touchdown. So I think, you know, if you had to choose, which they kind of do, then that's what you choose. You let the quarterback run and then try to put a good hit on him. You know, Cam Newton fumbled the ball. You know, Carolina came up with it in the end zone, unfortunately.
In fairness, it was a great play. Yeah, in fairness, it was a great play made by Major Wright. And, I don't know, it still struck me as sort of an odd it just strikes me as an odd thing that it works so consistently. But I have to get over my pet peeves on this call. This is going to have to be what I try to do because I'm still thinking about Steve Smith splitting the seam. I sent you a message earlier in the week, and I said I was going to ask you an offensive question. Well, we can ask you from a defensive perspective. It seemed to me this offense turned a corner late in the third quarter, and they turned that corner, one where they had a good field position, which they kind of had all day, but this was insanely good after a 6-yard punt. But it seemed to me when Earl Bennett came onto the field to change this game, and I don't want to make it about Devin Hester at wide receiver. I'm tired of that conversation. We've been having it now for 3 years. Earl Bennett, to me, solidified this passing game, and when he came into this game and was out there every play, they didn't have any problem moving the ball. What did you see from an offensive or a defensive perspective? You're a coach. What did you see out there when he came in?
There's not, from what I saw, there's not a lot of difference between what Earl Bennett can do and what Devin Hester can do as far as running their routes. Okay, Earl Bennett probably has a little bit better hands than Devin Hester. You rarely see Earl Bennett drop a ball. You'll see Devin Hester drop a ball every once in a while. He had one against Carolina. I think the difference is Jay Cutler trusts Earl Bennett 100%, and I don't think he necessarily trusts Devin Hester 100% to be in the right spot. If he has to get inside a cornerback, he's going to get inside that cornerback, so there's not the possibility of an interception when he throws a ball on time. He knows Earl Bennett's going to be in the right spot 100% of the time. I just don't think he has that same level of comfort with Devin Hester. Because I watched Devin run his routes. He was open. There were times where he was open. A few times, Cutler really just didn't have time to get him the football. A couple other times he went to Brandon Marshall instead of throwing the ball to Hester. I think it's just his level of comfort with Earl Bennett. And now you put Earl Bennett on the field with Brandon Marshall and Devin Hester. You know, now you have really three weapons that you have to account for. You know, you might say, hey, Devin Hester is not a real receiver, you know, from a defensive standpoint. You know, he's not going to run great routes. They're not going to throw him the ball 8 to 10 times a game. But if you don't account for Devin Hester, that he can put a 70-yard touchdown on the board in one snap. Okay, so you have to account for him. You know what Brandon Marshall brings to the table. And now, you have another guy in Earl Bennett that can get open and make catches. So it creates a different matchup problems for a defense. And I think, you know, once Jeffrey comes back, I mean, you have four guys, Kellen Davis in the red zone, really that can get it done. And you know, as he gets back, as he gets more acclimated to the NFL game, you know, I think you're going to see this receiving core, you know, stay together for a while. And the more comfortable Jay Cutler is, the less he's going to take a sack, the more he's going to throw the ball out on time to his receivers. And, you know, I think the more this passing game is going to grow.
You were on this team during the Super Bowl run, and I always say this about Aaron Rodgers is a great quarterback. Dante Culpepper was a great quarterback with the Minnesota Vikings, Eli Manuel, those guys. The guy that used to always frighten me and still does against the Bears has been Matt Hasselbeck. And the reason it's been Matt Hasselbeck is because I always say, to beat the Bears, you've got to be willing to go on a 16-play drive.
Yeah.
And Matt Hasselbeck is always willing to go on a 16-play drive. He's willing to take that 8-yard inseam every chance he gets. And I remember that game a few years ago where he threw 150 passes to Mike Williams, who was out of the league 6 weeks later. But the guy caught 140 yards. I mean, he's just willing to sit there and take what the defense gives him, and that's how you beat this team. What I think he's a little older now. He's not going to extend plays with his legs. How did the Bear defense come out this week knowing they're getting Hasselbeck? What do you do to a quarterback like Hasselbeck, and how do you disrupt his rhythm outside of the obvious? Well, you get pressure on him, but how do you, from a secondary perspective, take on a guy like Hasselbeck?
Well, I think you do exactly kind of what you said are Matt Hasselbeck's strengths, and that is make him take this offense on a 16-play drive. Make him take this offense on an 18-play drive. Make him, you know, make 8, 9, 10 passes on the money to create positive yardage, because, you know, if I'm the Bears defense, I'm going to say one of these plays, we're going to get a sack, we're going to tackle Chris Johnson for a loss, you know, we're going to get a tip ball, we're going to get an interception. Something's going to happen the longer they have the football. If we make them make steady plays down the field, not give up anything cheap to Chris Johnson, which, you know, 5 weeks ago you would say, hey, let's not even worry about this guy. But, you know, recently he's been playing at a much higher level. You make Matt Hasselbeck do that, and you just try to collapse the pocket as quickly as possible, because he's not the same guy. You know, he's still crafty. He's still a veteran. He knows where guys are going to line up and where they're going to be in coverage. But he can't get outside the pocket and hurt guys with his legs anymore. And he wasn't a fast guy, but he was a crafty guy. So that's what you do. And you know, you're going to say that our defense can play more consistently than your offense can, because we can cover your receivers if we shut Chris Johnson down and force you into passing situations. You know, this front four can get after it and force Matt Hasselbeck into some problems.
What do you see this weekend? Do you know Chris Johnson's a little resurgent here? Is this going to be a weekend you think the Bears might struggle to stop the run, or do they go in there and handle their business relatively easily?
I don't think this defense is going to struggle to stop the run all season. I mean, they're just too good up front. They are too good tackling ball carriers. You know, they're really the best in the league right now against the run, and there's a reason for that. And I think that's your focus every defense, every week, and every game, you know, says, hey, our first goal, our first responsibility, the first thing we have to do is to stop the run. You know, that never changes. But with this defense, if you can do that and force teams to be one-dimensional, with the way this front four has been playing, it really makes it hard on an offense to score points. You know, Carolina's answer was, you know, a lot of three-step, a lot of getting the ball to Cam Newton's hands quickly. You know, once they kind of established that, you know, he was able to open up a few more things down the field. And I think it was really a good game plan, you know, by Carolina to get Cam Newton comfortable, to not have any early mistakes, and then, you know, allow him to kind of make throws down the field the more comfortable he got. I think that, you know, the same game plan that Chicago's used, you know, all year, kind of mix up their looks, stop Chris Johnson, and force Matt Hasselbeck to beat him, which I really don't think he can do.
as a defender, you come off a game, and this is the last one with Cam Worrell. As a defender, you come off a game like last week. The defense clearly looked lethargic. They were not their best last week. The offense was sloppy for three quarters. You come out of that game with a win. It's sort of a best-case scenario, right? Because now Lovie's got the win, but he's got three quarters of tape to teach you with. As a player, do you go into the locker room or into the tape, into the meeting room early in the week and just say, hey, we got away with one. We can't play like that anymore.
Oh,
so
yeah,
what's the player approach?
Yeah, that's 100%. You know, that's exactly the mentality that these guys have. And I've been in the room when we won a game we probably shouldn't have, where we played a little sloppy on defense and, you know, we slipped away with one. A win in the NFL is a win, whether it's 3-0 or 90-0. You know, it's all about getting a win, and that's what they got. But, you know, they expect way more out of themselves. You know, a much higher level of play, much better execution, and really just speaking, you know, from playing on this defense, when you give up 22 points to a team, it makes you angry, okay? You're angry because you say there's no way we should ever give up that many points to an offense, okay? And whatever we have to do, whatever mistakes we have to fix, you know, whatever we have to get better at this week, that's what we're going to do, because we're not going to have that same performance the next week. And I guarantee that's exactly the mentality they had in the meeting room this week. You know, their offense, same thing, you know. Mike Tice is a no BS kind of coach. So I guarantee anytime they play a little bit sloppy or have mistakes, he's going to get those corrected. And those guys are going to come out and try to not make those same mistakes again. And I think this whole team is going to play with a chip on their shoulder. They're 6-1, but they, you know, they just squeaked by a 1-6 team. And that's definitely not what they expect out of themselves. And I definitely think they're going to have a much better performance this week.
Perfect way to end, Cam. Next week we will wrap up this Tennessee week and get ready for Houston Texans. That's going to be fun.
Yeah,
that's going to be fun. JJ Squat. All right, talk to you next week, Cam.
All right, sounds good.